Hey, Christy Noem, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Here's your legacy. Corruption and chaos. Parents and children tear gassed. Moms and nurses, U.S. citizens getting shot in the face. Now that you're gone, don't think you get to just walk away. I guarantee you, you will still be held accountable.
You go, J.B. Pritzker. You tell her. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. It's delightful to have you here. As you heard there at the top of the show from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, Christy Noem, sometimes known as Ice Barbie, the delightful puppy killer and American citizen killer and wildly corrupt, ridiculously inexperienced Donald Trump sycophant tapped to be his secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, is out. Have you heard the news, Desi Doyen?
Yes, and she has quite a resume.
Yes, she does. Let's discuss that a little bit. As DHS chief, she is out after, frankly, 2 days of brutal back-to-back congressional hearings in both the U.S. House and Senate, in which she even faced rare but blistering criticism from a few Republican lawmakers, if you can believe it or not, following her just violent, incompetent, utterly failed leadership of the nation's third largest cabinet department, after only the Defense Department and the Department of Veterans Affairs. DHS has nearly 300,000 employees who answered to Christy Noem, a budget of well over $100 billion. It oversees dozens of federal agencies, including Customs and Border Patrol, or CBP, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, the Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, the Secret Service, the Coast Guard, and many others, all run by this twit, although not anymore, I guess. Her ridiculous tenure included dressing up to play act in videos as if she was actually an agent at these various agencies I just mentioned. And if her undoing wasn't overseeing the murder of two American citizens who were peacefully protesting in Minneapolis, murdered by immigration police at CBP and ICE under her watch during what was called Operation Metro Surge, and then falsely calling them domestic terrorists within hours of their murders. Well, if that was not her undoing, perhaps it was the granting of multi-million-dollar no-bid federal contracts, such as the $143 to $148 million contract to a shell company called Safe America Media, which had been created just 11 days before they were granted that contract by Noem. The new company had no headquarters, no website, no track record or history of government work. That company then subcontracted the work to an outfit called the Strategy Group, whose CEO is the husband of Noem's former DHS assistant secretary and her longtime aide from when she served as governor of South Dakota, a woman by the name of Trisha McLaughlin.
You forgot accomplished liar, Trisha McLaughlin.
You've heard her telling lie after lie on behalf of the DHS and its many agencies over the past year or so.
Yep, she should be called Trisha Baghdad Bob McLaughlin.
There you go.
If you don't know who that is, look it up.
Look it up. But she actually abruptly stepped down a few weeks ago for some reason. She seemed to be doing a very good and effective job of lying on behalf of the administration, so I'm not sure why she was pushed out unless it had something to do with this, as this contracting scandal was just beginning to emerge. The contract in question was for a massive $220 million DHS border security advertising and media campaign that naturally prominently featured the delightful Ms. Noem herself as ordered under a so-called emergency border authority in order to bypass competitive bidding. In other words, she used claims of an emergency at the border to say, well, you know what? We're not going to go through the regular contracting prices. We're just going to give this to whoever we want. It was an emergency media campaign, apparently. Here's a bit of how just a part of Noem's grilling on this particular matter, how it played out on Wednesday in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee as Congressman Jonah Goose of Colorado grilled the former, now former, Homeland Security Secretary about the issue and how she came to choose this company for this particular job.
Madam Secretary, I'll read from the notice from your agency. Given the immediate action to significantly reduce illegal immigration and border crossings, DHS identified four companies, four of the hundreds of thousands of companies in the United States, you identified four. Mm-hmm. One of those is this Safe America Media Company. Where is Safe America Media headquartered?
I don't know.
I don't know either, Madam Secretary. We can't find it. Mm-hmm. We can't find a website. We did find an address that's registered for this company. Do you know where that address is?
Is there a problem with this contract?
I'll tell you about it.
Because it was done according
to law. Madam Secretary, the address is registered to a political operative. Madam Secretary, the company, and then I'll give you an opportunity to respond. The company is registered to a political operative in Virginia. Do you know, just by way of example, whether this company that received $143 million in taxpayer dollars, has it ever done work for the government before?
I don't know. I can't.
The answer is it has not. And do you know why we know that? Because it was incorporated 8 days. 8 days before this contract went out. You want the American people to believe that this is all above board?
Yes,
that $143 million of taxpayer money just happened to go to this one company that doesn't have a headquarters, doesn't have a website, has never done work for the federal government before, and is registered, apparently, or attached to a residence from a political operative. And, of course, one of the subcontractors of that contract, as you know, is a political firm that's tied to you back when you were governor of South Dakota. The reason why I ask these questions is that this is taxpayer money. And I presume, I don't know this for a fact, but Senator Tillis noted yesterday the way in which your agency is blocking the Inspector General from 11 different investigations that it is trying to conduct. I don't know if this happens to be one of them. I certainly hope it is, because eventually the facts will become public in this regard.
Well, we will see if they do. And of course, while the waste, the fraud, the abuse of hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money, the graft, the grift is all shameful enough, it seems kind of unlikely that Donald Trump would fire her for that alone. I mean, he's the king of grift and graft. But all of it may pale in comparison, frankly, to her grotesque, violent roundup of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of immigrants in this country, a roundup which included not just immigrants who were here perfectly lawfully, but even American citizens, and the violent treatment and detention and even murder of some of those citizens, including Renee Good and Alex Preddy in Minneapolis back in January. And though unlike Noem's family's puppy, she did not brag about killing Renee Good and Alex Preddy personally, though she did race to the cameras shortly after their murders by the immigration officials that she oversaw. The murders of wife and mother Renee Good, shot multiple times in the face. Veterans Administration ICU nurse Alex Preddy, shot multiple times in the back, while neither of them posed a threat to Noem's immigration thugs. She raced to the cameras after their killings in order to call both the late Ms. Good and the late Mr. Preddy, quote, domestic terrorists. Here's Congressman Jamie Raskin, ranking Democratic member of the House Judiciary Committee, confronting Noam about that fact on Wednesday in the U.S. House.
We're fighting for American citizens, Madam Secretary.
Today because, you are. You
because your ICE agents shot them in the face and killed them. And each person you see up on this dais today represents 800,000 American citizens. Mm-hmm. And you should know that as a former member of Congress. Now, her brother said that Renee Good was someone who could make you believe things were going to be okay despite all the hardship because she chose optimism. Alex Preddy was a Boy Scout, a choir member, an outdoorsman from Green Bay who lavished attention on his beloved dog, Jewel. His sister called her brother someone who had a way of lighting up every room that he walked into. But only a few hours after they were gunned down by your agents, you called Renee a domestic terrorist. You said Alex committed an act of domestic terrorism. Alex's parents responded to your calling their son a domestic terrorist. They said the sickening lies told about our son by the administration are reprehensible and disgusting. And I want to give you a chance before the entire country to correct your false and defamatory claim. Based on what you know today, Madam Secretary, were Renee Good and Alex Preddy domestic terrorists?
Congressman, what happened in Minnesota in those two incidents was an absolute tragedy.
Were they domestic terrorists, as you said to the country?
My condolences to their families, because I know that their lives will never be the same after that happened.
Is that an apology for what you said?
We, in those instances, offer as much information as we can from officers and agents on the ground in a chaotic scene that gets...
I'll repeat my question, reclaiming my time. Based on what you know today, Madam Secretary, based on what you know today, were Renee Good and Alex Preddy domestic terrorists?
As you know, there's ongoing investigations that are being led by the
FBI. Oh, but you didn't wait for the investigation, did you? You didn't wait for the evidence. You proclaimed that they were domestic terrorists at the time. Why did you do that?
And you didn't wait to attack our law enforcement.
Why did you do that?
We're going into a dangerous situation.
Why did you call them domestic terrorists?
Is our ICE officers and our HSI officers that day risked their lives to protect that scene. So evidence could be reclaimed. So it could be used in the investigation. Because those violent rioters that
were
there...
So you're proud of the fact that you called them domestic terrorists? Is that what you're telling America?
HSI officers put their lives on the line to protect that scene so evidence so we could have...
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. But you told a lie about them. You said that they were domestic terrorists. Do you regret that?
I offer my condolences to those family. And again,
based on what you know today, were Renee Good and Alex Preddy domestic terrorists?
There's ongoing investigations, and so I can't...
So you still don't know. You think that's an open question.
I would think you would want there to still be investigations going into these situations.
Well, you stated the conclusion 2 hours after they were killed that they were domestic terrorists. I wanted to give you an opportunity to correct the record, not just for their family, but for everybody in America who believes in the truth and fairness and honesty.
In every situation, as facts come out, we relay...
You know, your acting ICE director, Todd Lyons, came before Congress. He said he had no knowledge whatsoever that Alex Preddy and Renee Good were domestic terrorists. None. This is your guy. He said that. He admitted that that was wrong. Why won't you admit it?
I'll tell you, the investigation's still ongoing, and we'll...
So do you regret speaking before the investigation?
I would say that in those situations...
You regret that?
...the chaotic scene on the ground, we relay information to the American people that they're asking for. And as the things change, situations change...
People were asking you whether they were domestic terrorists? And you decided that they were before the investigation?
As we learn more, we...
You don't want to say anything to their families?
I did. I said I condolences.
For what? How about an apology for what you said about their loved ones?
My heart is with them, and we will continue to stand with them as they get a complete investigation into these situations.
Lovely woman, Kristi Noem, in front of the U.S. House, in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday, being questioned by Congressman Jamie Raskin. Now, you would think that Donald Trump would actually give her a promotion for all of those lies and her refusals to concede simple error, much less wrongdoing in testimony before Congress. You would think that she'd get a promotion for that. And though he removed her as DHS secretary on Thursday, he didn't actually fire her. He made up a pretend new job for her to take instead. In her first public comments after her removal as DHS chief, Noem thanked President Trump for giving her her next job as the first so-called special envoy for the Shield of the Americas. A completely made-up new job, a new job title granted to her by the FIFA Peace Prize-winning President Donald Trump as he announced her firing as DHS chief on his failing social media website earlier today. What does the special envoy for the Shield of the Americas do, which sounds frankly like a job in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Well, actually, nobody knows because it's all made up, just like the FIFA Peace Prize. But Noem said she is looking forward to working on dismantling cartels that have, quote, poured drugs into our nation and killed our children and grandchildren.
I wonder what the salary is.
We'll find out. Or maybe we won't. She also promoted her Homeland Security accomplishments as she on her way out the door, saying that under her leadership, the department had delivered on securing the border and encouraging millions of migrants to leave the country. And no, she still didn't apologize for murdering American citizens as if they were her puppy and a family goat in the gravel pit. Trump also announced, along with her firing, that she would be replaced by the Looney Tunes Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. And just for the record, as you get to know him, his name is not Mark Wayne Mullen. It's Mark Wayne. That's his first name. His second name is Mullen, which will all probably make more sense as you get to know this Yahoo, who may ultimately make Noem seem like a super genius and perfect for the job. To give you a taste of Mark Wayne Mullen, a former professional, he's a U.S. senator now. He's a former professional mixed martial arts MMA fighter. Here's a short clip from a U.S. Senate hearing that was being chaired at the time by Senator Bernie Sanders from November of 2023 when Teamster President Sean O'Brien was testifying before the committee. And Mullen challenged him to a physical fight in the Senate during the hearing.
Quick. The Tough Guy Act and these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, anytime, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, hold, stop it.
Is that your solution? Every problem?
No, no, sit down.
Oh, no,
sit down.
Okay.
You know, you're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Active.
Oh, okay.
Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond? Mr.
Hold
Chairman.
It. Hold it. If
hold
we
on.
Can. No, I have the mic.
Said.
I'm sorry.
This is
hold
what
it.
He said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing. And God knows the American people have enough of contempt for Congress. Let's not
I don't
make
like
it worse.
Thugs and bullies.
You
have, I don't like you because you just described yourself.
Hold it.
Good luck figuring out there which one was Mullen and which one was the union president. But the fact that a U.S. senator is challenging a witness to fight in a U.S. Senate hearing, well, that may tell us all we need to know about Mark Wayne Mullen and maybe why he got the job. That's the new Homeland Security guy, at least if he can get confirmed in the U.S. Senate, though apparently he gets to serve in that role as long as he wants, as long as his nomination stays live under current statutes. But we will get to more on him, I suspect, in the future. For now, back to Noem. I'll let others bring you up to speed on the long-term alleged affair that the married, now former Homeland Security Director was supposedly having with her special government employee assistant, Corey Lewandowski, Trump's former campaign chair, who has faced several sexual assault allegations. But the fact that Donald Trump knew he was going to fire her and let her go out for 2 days in front of the U.S. House and U.S. Senate and be asked about that affair. Well, that's how much Donald Trump cares for the people that he works with. I will also let others accept the recap the story of the luxury Gulfstream jet that she's been traveling in, costing anywhere from $70 to $200 million, that she wanted the government to actually buy for her personal use 24/7, even as she claimed it was also to be used to fly immigrants out of the country in deportation flights.
In a luxury jet, sure.
Yeah, well, they would have liked the two onboard showers, the master bedroom, the bar, the lounge on that plane. It would have been very nice for them. Just a nice parting gift as we sent them to wherever she wanted. But as noted, it wasn't only Democrats who came down hard on Noam during 2 days of brutal hearings in the House and Senate this week. So did a few Republicans, if you can believe it. Like, for example, Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina. Here's a montage of just a few of the very gentle questions that he directed toward Noam on Tuesday.
We expect exceptional leadership, and you've demonstrated anything but that. Time after time after time, I've been disappointed. I have reason to believe that you're violating the law, either knowingly or unknowingly.
Senator,
no.
That $100,000 only had to do
with... I will hold the clock until I finish.
Okay.
We just want numbers. We want 1,000 a day, 6,000 a day, 9,000 a day, because numbers matter, right? No, they don't matter. Quality matters, not quantity, quality. And what we've seen is a disaster. Under your leadership, Ms. Noam, a disaster. What we've seen is innocent people getting detained that turn out are American citizens. I could talk about the culture that's been created here with Stephen Miller aiding and abetting. The fact that you can't admit to a mistake, which looks like under investigation, is gonna prove that Ms. Good and Mr. Pretty probably should not have been shot in the face and in the back. Not only should the FBI be investigating it, but every single law enforcement agency in that jurisdiction should be invited to it. Matter of fact, in Ms. Good's case, I think that they were even saying that maybe there wasn't even a need to do it in the DOJ. That is stonewalling. That's a failure of leadership. And that is why I've called for your resignation. I read your book last week. The passage where you talk about killing a dog that was 14 months old. You decided to kill that dog because you had not invested the appropriate time and training. And then you have the audacity to go into a book and say it's a leadership lesson about tough choices. At that same lunch hour, you killed a goat. And you killed the goat because you said it was behaving badly. You are a farmer. You don't castrate a goat, they behave badly. You should have probably done that before, but my point is, those are bad decisions made in the heat of the moment. Not unlike what happened up in Minneapolis. I don't want an applause. Please don't do that for me.
Well, I'll tell you, if that goat didn't get castrated, Kristi Noem certainly did in the Senate on Tuesday. So nice. That's what you get when you got a Republican elected official. That was Senator Tom Tillis, who is not running for office again and doesn't have to worry about kowtowing and pleasing the Supreme Cult leader. As noted yesterday, Tillis has decided to retire rather than run again. Democrats see that seat, his seat, as one of their best chances to flip a Senate seat from red to blue this November, as North Carolina's popular Democratic Governor Roy Cooper is now officially the party's nominee this November. I'd hope to get to more election news today, specifically regarding the Senate. We will see if I get there, because I had to shake things up here today to cover the Noam news. But I would like to close this segment with a story. Story time. Courtesy of our friend Keith Barber, former Republican and attorney and a frequent guest on this program, as he wrote up this story this week on just one of the scores, perhaps hundreds, perhaps thousands, of just, you know, pathetic, heartbreaking stories like this that are now playing out all over our country today, thanks in no small part to the unapologetic cruelty, corruption, incompetence of the now former head of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. Because while it's a sad story, it's also a hopeful story, I think, suggesting that there is or may be a way out of this morass when good people stand up for what is right and for the rule of law and for the Constitution. Even in this case, perhaps especially in this case, when it comes from a Trump-appointed federal judge standing up for what is right and decent and the rule of law. It's the story of a ruling that was issued this week in federal court in the case of Hessler Asaf Garcia Lanza versus Kristi Noem, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, at least until today. Keith writes, it's a story that I think even the most hardened of brainwashed MAGAs would find too difficult to reconcile. Well, we will see about that. For the record, Keith notes, U.S. District Judge Gary R. Brown was appointed by Donald Trump. When Brown's initial nomination was returned because the Senate adjourned without acting on his nomination, Trump renominated him. So this judge was actually nominated by Trump twice for the job. Hessler Asaf Garcia Lanza is a legal resident of this country. He came to this country from Honduras 15 years ago at the age of 9 as a victim of child abuse and neglect. He was granted special immigrant juvenile status, SIJ status, making him lawfully present while his application for permanent legal status is considered. He was issued a work permit. He has never committed a crime. He took advantage of his lawful residency to attend the New York City College of Technology, where he graduated magna cum laude. At 24 years of age, he secured a job as a theatrical lighting designer. From a terrifying start, his story, pulling himself up with hard work and dedication, is how the American dream story begins for many immigrants who have gone on to do great things for this country, notes Keith. Alas, under this villainous regime, that dream has become a nightmare. On January 3rd, Garcia Lanza was walking to work when he saw an SUV with blacked-out windows suspiciously following him, leading him to believe that he had been targeted for a robbery. He should have been so lucky, quips Keith. Four vehicles surrounded him. He was swarmed by masked immigration agents. ICE now admits that, well, they got the wrong guy, that they were looking for someone else who did have a criminal record and who they claim, quote, looked like Garcia Lanza, because, you know, they all look the same, right? The agents asked if he had a green card. He presented his work authorization card. They took the card. They still have not given it back to him. While the agents knew that they had missed their target, they nonetheless illegally arrested Garcia Lanza. Quote, we're going to take him with us anyway, declared the senior officer, according to Judge Brown's retelling in his ruling this week. They had no probable cause that he had committed any crime. While in detention, they filled out an administrative arrest warrant. An arrest warrant, notes Barber, cannot be done after an arrest. After all, what would be the point? ICE simply declared without any kind of hearing that his work permit and legal status was rescinded. And they began proceedings to deport him. Again, a legal resident who had committed no crimes, done nothing wrong. Even while they continued to hold him, ICE eventually released him several days later after a judge ordered his release. ICE then declared that Garcia Lanza owed the agency $5,000 in costs related to their illegally arresting him. In condemning all of this, the Trump-appointed judge did not hold back, writes Keith, who goes on to quote from Judge Brown's ruling. Quote, as part of ICE's recent surge in enforcement efforts in violation of constitutional safeguards, statutory guarantees, and regulatory restrictions, agents arrested Garcia Lanza without a warrant. He was handcuffed, shackled, detained in a facility designed to hold charged and convicted criminals. Remember, we've talked about this a lot. When even if you are properly held, related to some sort of violation of immigration violation, that's a civil crime. That's not a crime. You're supposed to be held in detention, not in prison, but a detention center. Yet this guy was held with criminals, both charged and convicted. The judge continues, ICE officers targeted Garcia Lanza for arrest simply because he looked like someone else for whom the agents were purportedly searching. Having discovered their mistake when presented with proof that he had legitimate immigration classification, ICE agents nevertheless continued to detain him for days. As bureaucratic cover for the arrest, agents completed a post-arrest administrative warrant and then commenced baseless removal proceedings against him. This boy who came here, abused and neglected when he was 9 years old, they were preparing to deport him back to that home country, which he left when he was 9 years old, 15 years ago. Says the judge, DHS proceeded to revoke the deferred action and work authorization associated with his SIJ status in what Judge Brown describes as, quote, a reprehensible act of unimaginable cruelty. The judge continued, this isn't how things are supposed to work in America. Unquestionably, he says, the laws of human decency condemn such villainy. Villainy, the right word for it, I think. Villainy that was overseen by, yes, Kristi Noem. Equally, the judge writes, the laws of this nation, including the Constitution, statutory law, and regulations prescribe, in other words, bar, the illegal arrest and detention of the petitioner, as well as the retaliatory termination without notice of the privileges associated with his SIJ status. While the executive branch retains the right, as it has done, to set policy regarding immigration matters, it is forbidden from trampling our system of laws, a system which has safeguarded this nation for close to 250 years, wrote the Trump-appointed judge. Keith Barber observed, I have recently read numerous decisions condemning the Trump regime's immigration enforcement. However, seeing a judge accuse the United States government of villainy and unimaginable cruelty condemned by the laws of human decency strikes me as a new experience. For its part, the argument from the U.S. government, he writes, amounted to a claim that the executive branch that granted Garcia Lanza legal status can arbitrarily and capriciously take it away and that no court has jurisdiction to say otherwise. That's what the government was arguing in this case. Yes, you might not like it, but we get to decide whatever we want the law to be, essentially. Judge Brown, writes Keith, would have none of it, noting that the government's brief, quote, ignores the facts and is a boilerplate screed with language benefiting a high school term paper, wrote the judge. As the judge pointed out, the statute creating the SIJ status Garcia Lanza was granted expressly states that those given such status, quote, shall be deemed to have been paroled in the United States. When the government starts arresting and detaining people, writes Keith, and taking post hoc bureaucratic actions to justify it, we are no longer truly a republic. The Trump-appointed judge, he notes, also cited evidence that the, quote, abhorrent and illegal practices identified in this opinion are not limited to this case, but are seemingly being inflicted on a widespread basis. Correct. As noted, this is just one case. This is one case among hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands, likely similar, if not identical, to this one that we may never know about. It's impossible to cover all of them. It's impossible to give you the details and the rulings in all of them, many of them this heartbreaking or even more so. So I thought it important to at least share this one for now to remind you, amid everything else, of what is still going on and the kind of cruelty that Ice Barbie Kristi Noem gleefully oversaw. The judge then invited defense counsel Garcia Lanza's attorney to seek class action relief for similarly situated individuals, other people like Garcia Lanza who are facing this same issue. He ordered Garcia Lanza's work permit to be returned and that the $5,000 plus fine that the government had tried to impose, that be vacated. He It went further still by suggesting Garcia Lanza seek relief under the Equal Access to Justice Act to compel the government to pay for the costs of his legal representation. The act allows such restitution when an agency's actions against a person were not, quote, substantially justified, as was the case here. The government trammeling of rights is not necessarily free. Yes, you may pay for it. To summarize, writes Keith, the villainous Trump regime committed acts of unimaginable cruelty, violating laws of human decency, all as bureaucratic cover to rationalize an illegal arrest and detention, as the judge described all of those things. The government defense was little more than, quote, a boilerplate screed with language befitting a high school term paper that clearly misstated the facts and the relevant law. All of this was done, he notes, in our name. As a government of the people, the government acts as our representative when it commits such atrocities. As another judge recently wrote, quote, when the state reaches out and takes hold of a human being and deprives him of his liberty, that act must present itself as the people's act. What the Trump regime is doing smears all of us, concludes Keith. And he is absolutely right. And at least here, there seems to have been, well, at least some measure of justice, some eventually. But there is much more that is needed to come. I don't know how long it will take to get there, but I am actually confident that it will come. Though, frankly, it cannot come soon enough at this point, and firing Ice Barbie Christie Nome is just the beginning. As Democratic Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon posted at Blue Sky on Thursday in response to Nome's ouster, quote, turns out lawlessness is not a winning strategy. See you at Nuremberg 2.0, he added. Well done, Senator. I'm looking forward to it. But first, let's take a break and we'll get some midterm election news and the Green News Report. All of that is still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, in some truncated 2026 midterm election news today, we'll have to continue to try to catch up with it as we go. Yet again, under the category of Republicans believe they cannot win with good policies that voters like, so they're just trying to rig the election instead, apparently. Some rather stunning news out of Montana late on Wednesday broke after we got off the air, but Senator Steve Daines, Republican of Montana, withdrew his reelection bid on Wednesday just weeks after filing for re-election in late February, and more importantly, he withdrew the re-election bid just minutes before the deadline in Montana to withdraw in what seems a particularly sleazy move by the two-term Republican senator. It was a surprise announcement that some are suggesting could offer Democrats maybe a long-shot chance to flip a seat in their uphill fight to win control of the U.S. Senate this year. Daines made the announcement just minutes before the filing deadline closed for November's election, saying that he had been, quote, wrestling with this decision for months and that it was time for, quote, new leaders to spearhead the fight for Montana in the U.S. Senate. So Daines filed his candidacy withdrawal papers at 4:57 p.m. on Wednesday, just 3 minutes before the deadline. The 4:57 p.m. On Wednesday when he pulled out, that was just 5 minutes after, at 4:52 p.m., that Montana's Trump-appointed U.S. attorney, Kurt Almy, filed his papers to run for that office, leaving no one else any time to try and get into this year's race now that a two-term incumbent was stepping down. It was obviously planned, as Danes quickly endorsed Almy just moments later, as did, yes, Donald Trump. Dane's announcement, reportedly a surprise to even his Senate colleagues, upended the political landscape in Montana. The New York Times reports, describing it as a sparsely populated and independent-minded state that has veered rightward in recent years. The last remaining statewide Democrat, Senator John Tester, lost his reelection bid to Senator Tim Sheehy in 2024. A handful of Democrats are running for the Senate seat, including a former state legislator by the name of Riley Neal. But the party brand in Montana has eroded in recent years, the Times notes, and Tester himself has been at odds with the state Democrats recently, calling the party's messaging, quote, horrible early this year. By waiting until the last minute to withdraw, essentially, Danes essentially cleared the field for his chosen successor by denying others the chance to file to be on the ballot and, of course, preventing a more perhaps more viable candidate to file on the Democratic side, like Tester, for example, or former Governor Steve Bullock. Former Governor Brian Schweitzer, a Democrat, said that he thought the move left an opening, perhaps, for his party because even many Republicans would be dismayed that Danes had essentially anointed his own successor. I think there's going to be real pushback on Almy, Schweitzer said, and it's simply because Montanans are not going to accept that a king gets to choose the prince. We will see if he is right about that. But Larry Sabato, political professor who directs the University of Virginia's Center for Politics and the election prognosticator's Sabato's Crystal Ball, wrote, quote, Crystal Ball is making an immediate ratings change for Montana Senate from safe Republican to likely Republican, pending more information. He said sometimes the voters react badly to these last-minute backroom deals, resulting in a switch of candidates without the public's involvement. Another prognosticator, Inside Elections, also downgraded the seat from solid Republican to likely Republican. Eyes are now turning to the independent candidate for this office in Montana, a guy by the name of Seth Bodner. He is a Green Beret veteran, a current officer with the Montana National Guard. He's a former Rhodes Scholar. He's recently was the president of the University of Montana until he quit to run for Senate as an independent. He was reportedly pushed into the race by former Senator John Tester. He quickly responded to the switcheroo by Danes. He wrote, quote, Steve Danes has so little respect for Montana Republicans that he withdrew at the last minute to coronate his handpicked successor instead of giving them a voice at the ballot box. This is the disgusting arrogance of Washington politicians and their party bosses who trade power back and forth like candy while Montanans are crushed under higher costs and fewer opportunities. I'm running, he said, to be an independent voice for every single Montanan who is sick of this broken political system and who wants a leader who stands up for our state against the corruption of political elites like Steve Danes and Kurt Almy. Danes is the sixth Republican senator now to choose not to seek re-election this year, which suggests that lawmakers foresee a pretty tough midterm season likely to break the current GOP trifecta. Danes bowing out comes just days after another Montanan in Congress, Rep. Ryan Zinke, formerly Donald Trump's Interior Secretary?
Yes, the extremely corrupt former Interior Secretary.
Well, he's getting out, too. He abruptly announced that he will retire at the end of the current term as well. His decision at least left Republicans 48 hours to decide whether they wanted to run for the office instead. There's only two House seats for Montana. For the record, while this sort of thing is not common, it has occurred from time to time, and it has drawn criticism whenever it does, including when a Democrat, Congressman Chuy Garcia of Illinois, you may recall, he pulled out of a House race in Chicago last year to clear the way for his chief of staff to run for his seat. Same sort of thing at the very last second. The U.S. House officially reprimanded him for doing that, for that move in a bipartisan vote. Do you suppose Republicans in the Senate will join in condemning Steve Daines for having done that this year?
Oh, hell no.
So I don't know what's going to happen this November, but I suspect it is not going to be a boring primary season if the kickoff so far is any indication. And by the way, Montana's other U.S. senator also made news on Wednesday. Senator Tim Sheehy, who Daines had name-checked in his retirement video as the one to, quote, spearhead the fight for Montana in the U.S. Senate. Well, apparently Sheehy took that quite literally on Wednesday. He appointed himself to help the U.S. Capitol Police to remove a protesting veteran. A veteran Marine in dress uniform.
Full dress.
At a U.S. Senate hearing. After Sheehy joined this scuffle to remove this guy, and it was all caught on video, at some point a snap could be heard on the video recording. The protester said afterwards that his arm had been broken in this scuffle to remove him, that Senator Sheehy was just very helpful, very eager to rough this guy out of the room as he had protested against the Iran war. The man, Brian McGinnis, wearing his dress uniform, he's actually a Green Party candidate for North Carolina's Senate seat. He had attended the Senate Armed Services Committee hearing to protest against what he derided as a war on behalf of Israel. Senator Sheehy tweeted afterwards that he'd, quote, decided to help out and de-escalate the situation. De-escalated, apparently, by helping to break this Marine's arm. In the room, as he returned to the dais, an audience member reportedly yelled out that he's a punk and a coward, and Sheehy reportedly responded, go F yourself. Helping to de-escalate the situation and making Montana proud. Of course, we might have expected no less from the Montana senator.
What, you mean mistreating a veteran?
Well, you may recall back in 2017, then Montana Congressman Greg Gianforte, while running for Congress, he body slammed a reporter for The Guardian before a campaign event after he was asked a question, a simple question about the GOP's health care bill at the time. Gianforte lied about the entire incident, basically said it never happened, but he was rebuffed by a Fox News crew who was in the same room and saw the whole thing. He was ultimately charged with misdemeanor assault. He later pleaded guilty to that misdemeanor assault, which seemed hardly a misdemeanor. I mean, he picked the guy up and body slammed him to the ground, a journalist, because he didn't like the question that he was asked. So he later pleaded guilty. He was sentenced to community service. He got a fine, had to go to anger management classes before then going on to be elected as Montana's governor in 2020. He was reelected in 2024. A lot of violence from Republicans in Congress in today's program, it seems.
Yep.
Mark Wayne Mullen threatening to beat up a union leader. Senator Sheehy from Montana breaking a guy's arm. Gianforte, of course, the governor of Montana, having beaten up a journalist. This seems to be what Republicans do. So I guess it should be little surprise that the reign of Kristi Noem, which is apparently now over, at least at DHS, was incredibly violent and deadly for citizens and non-citizens alike. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. I am Brad Friedman. This is The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Boy, what a week. What a week.
This week has been the longest year ever.
Yeah, not even over yet. You know, the war in Iran only started less than a week ago. Next Tuesday, by the way, primary elections in Mississippi. We will be covering those, of course, as always. But first, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
If this thing actually managed to go on any length of time, you're talking about a world recession.
Global economic fallout and supply chain disruption spread from Trump's war on Iran. A win for New York City, a loss for Donald Trump, plus the U.S. just had a massive battery boom last year.
Finally, a boom that I can get behind. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
As soon as this ends, those prices are going to drop, I believe, lower than even before.
Lower than anybody's ever seen? Lower than anybody ever thought possible? Well, when has he ever misled us before? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get dragged into the madness, just want to note that we are celebrating our 17th anniversary of the Green News Report this month. We are now in our 18th year, all thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue to connect the climate change dots over your public airwaves. And what do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, first, as we go to air, global oil and natural gas prices have soared even higher due to Donald Trump's war on Iran, escalating conflict across the Middle East. Amid growing concerns of a serious oil and gas supply crunch. Qatar, the world's second largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, has completely halted all production of LNG after Iran closed the Strait of Hormuz, through which a fifth of the world's oil and gas travel. European natural gas prices roughly doubled over just 2 days. A Bloomberg News analysis predicts that sustained high energy prices would bring the world economy to the brink of recession. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said on Wednesday that the United States will provide new risk insurance for all crude oil tankers in the Persian Gulf, backed by U.S. taxpayers.
You're welcome.
Here in the U.S., experts say that U.S. companies will be exporting even more U.S.-produced natural gas abroad, reducing domestic supplies, in turn raising the cost of heating and electricity for a majority of American households.
Well, that's no good for anybody except for the fossil fuel companies.
Yep, this week retail gasoline prices saw the biggest single day spike since 2022, according to Gas Buddy, and that is all excellent news for big oil profits, not so much for consumers.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Trump administration's rollbacks of vehicle fuel efficiency standards and the killing off of incentives that lowered the upfront cost of electric vehicles means that Americans will be spending more of their income at the gas pump indefinitely. Keeping Americans shackled to volatile, polluting fossil fuels is a primary goal of the Trump administration.
Yes, it is. Goal achieved.
Middle East expert and historian Juan Cole of the University of Michigan, in an interview with the broadcast, noted that the turmoil in global energy markets induced by Trump's war on Iran is deeply undermining the case for fossil fuels.
He thinks that he can fight off electric cars and windmills and solar, which he hates the way the devil hates holy water, by reviving these fossil fuels. And ironically enough, he probably just shot himself in the foot in this regard, because he's demonstrated once again that fossil fuels are a dead end.
Well done, Mr. Trump.
And I just want to note for the record that while the price of oil and gas soars around the world, sun and wind prices have remained stable. There is some positive news. The Trump administration has lost its fight to end New York City's congestion pricing program.
That is good news.
A Manhattan federal judge said Tuesday that the U.S. Department of Transportation acted unlawfully when it sought to terminate the federal agreement that gave New York City's congestion pricing program the green light.
Nice.
And finally, last year, the U.S. saw a massive battery boom. Utility-scale electric grid battery installations surged to an all-time record high in 2025, up 30% over the year before, according to a new solar industry report. The growth of battery storage across the U.S. is a sign of how utilities are increasingly investing in reorienting electric grids toward cheaper renewables and batteries, which are faster to build and price stable as electricity demand spikes across the country. And consumers benefit because battery storage is a flexible resource that meets demand peaks faster and without the pollution of natural gas or coal plants.
And all despite Donald Trump. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I got that boom, 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 that future boom, boom, boom. Let me get in there.
Sorry, battery booms for everybody. I think that's awesome.
That's much better than all the other kind of booms we've been dealing with lately. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated. It's always an honor. Thank you very much for that. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download all of them for free at any time at bradblog.com. As noted, we are 100% listener supported. We really need your help. It's really important right now, more so than ever, to help us keep going on your public airwaves. So please consider jumping in, hitting a donate button at bradblog.com or going straight to bradblog.com/donate. Pretty please. You can drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Here we go, satellite radio. Y'all get hit with the boom.